Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7, open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die.
We've been listening to an episode of the podcast A Matter of Conscience, GI Resistance During the Vietnam War. Producers Bill Short and Willis Seidenberg are Antiochians. They were in Yellow Springs for the Antioch reunion this summer, and I had a chance to speak with them about the podcast at WYSO. I met you both here at Antioch College in the late 1970s. Willis, you were assistant news director. And Bill, you're from here.
I was assistant news director, then I was an arts reporter, and then I was news director for a staff of one.
Well, I actually grew up in Cincinnati and in Enon, Ohio, which is just 6 miles from here. But I'm also an Antiochian because I went back to school as an older student and graduated in 83.
Bill, I became more familiar with your story as a GI resistor when I started seeing the portrait you had taken of your fellow GIs. Willie, you've had a distinguished career in radio and academia. Together, you two have been working on this project for decades. Can you describe where it started and how the collaboration has worked between the two of you and the GIs you connected with?
After I finished grad school at USC, we moved to Boston, and I got involved with a veterans group called the Smedley Butler Brigade. And it was a group of vets that were primarily protesting government support of the Contras in sending Contra aid to Central America. And I met a guy named Paul Atwood, who was a Marine vet and who had a similar story to mine of refusing orders while he was serving in the military. And he inspired me to start doing some interviews. So I did maybe 3 or 4 interviews, half a dozen interviews, and shot some portraits of the vets I was interviewing. And I felt kind of overwhelmed with all the material I was getting. And so I asked Willa if she would help me out. So she was working on some of the editing. Then we just decided, hey, this is a project we need to do together because of her experience with news reporting and writing. And I had good skills in photography, but not the skills that she had in editing and audio. So it just seemed like a perfect match. I was an artist in residence at the Addison Gallery of American Art at the Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts for 2 years. And Jock Reynolds, who was the director there, funded us to travel the country and complete the interviews. We had a small portion of our work shown at the WPA, the Washington Project for the Arts in Washington, that Jock was then the director of. And then when he moved to the Addison, he had shown some of our work there. Then we moved to the Addison. He knew the project wasn't finished and asked if he could help support the project getting finished. So Will and I spent, I don't know how long we spent.
Several years collecting. So what our process, then this was pre-internet. So we were having to find people through word of mouth. And so Jock funded us to drive around the country and interview vets. So we found vets all over the place. We went all the way to the West Coast. We were in Boston. We're in the middle of the country, and we'd do interviews that were about 2, sometimes 3 hours long. And then after the interview, Bill would shoot their portrait.
Yeah, the way we'd set it up is we carried a black seamless with us, and I wanted people to look at the person, and I wanted to be transparent as a photographer because I wanted the people not to think about the structure of the image so much as think about the person in the image. So I asked them, based on this idea of show and tell that all of us did in the 1950s in school, to bring something that was significant or of importance to them to the photo shoot. So we would get to somebody's house, we'd set up a traveling studio in a garage, a basement, a dining room, and I would do a test shot with Polaroid and show them exactly the setup to have everything ready. And then, as Willow was saying, we'd do the portrait immediately after the interview. And the purpose for that was that they were such emotionally laden interviews. I wanted that emotion to be carried in the photographs when I took the picture. And it was a collaborative thing because our subjects all knew exactly what they were in for, and they were all very happy to agree and allow us to photograph in that way.
It's worth noting that many of the voices that you hear in the podcast are no longer with us. The episode we featured today, I Quit, features the stories of two of the more famous participants in GI resistance to the war, Donald Duncan and Howard Levy. How did you make the original connection with those two?
We found Howard through a network, because Howard was incredibly active in the GI anti-war movement after he got out of the military. And throughout the last decades, I mean, you can Google his name and you see he appears in a lot of places. So he stayed really active. So he was very easy to find. Donald Duncan, on the other hand, was not as easy to find. And I will let Bill tell you, because I don't think he would have let us interview him had it not been for Bill and Bill's experience.
Yeah, I forget exactly how I got a phone number for him, but I think initially I had a phone number for his sister. And then I told his sister who we were and what we wanted to do. And she said, well, you know, he's dropped out of the whole protest system and he's now just working as a social worker and doesn't really want to have anything to do with it, but I'll run it by him and see what he says. And he, I think, kind of reluctantly said, yeah, give him my number and let him call me. So I called him, and after, you know, talking to him for 20 or 30 minutes and telling him about what I had done, what my history was, he agreed to meet with us. And so we actually, I think we drove from here, from Yellow Springs, through southern Indiana in a torrential rainstorm to a motel where he was staying, and interviewed him in one of the conference rooms there. And it was such a great interview. And then, unfortunately, Donald passed away, but about 10 years after that.
Yeah,
he was older than most of the other vets, because he'd actually enlisted in the early 50s, and
actually a little older when he enlisted.
Yeah, he was. And he was one of the very first people to be become part of the Green Berets.
And to your point, Dave, about these voices, we interviewed people in the late 80s, very early 90s. And so for some of them, it was only 15, 20 years, which if you're young, that sounds like a long time. But, you know, in retrospect, it wasn't so long after the war. So their memories about what had happened were still pretty good. And we have been trying to track down everybody we interviewed, and we have found that a good portion of them have passed away in the interim. Many of them died, you know, early in their 60s, early 70s. So I am really thankful that we were able to do it when we did it, because these are voices that we can preserve that are lost. And some of them, their stories are known. You can find bits and pieces of their story all over the place. But some of them, nobody ever interviewed them, right, because they didn't do big things. And that was part of our intent when we did the interviews. We didn't just want the big flashy stories. Donald Duncan, Howard Levy, they were very well known. But there were so many people we interviewed that just did small things that connected them to the movement. And we thought that was important to show that it was so broad, that it wasn't just the big things.
Yeah, like for instance, a desk clerk in the military would see orders for somebody to go to Vietnam, and he just conveniently lose it into the trash bin. And then that person would be in limbo. And if you're in limbo long enough and you're close enough to being discharged, you're just released and you never go. So even small things like that were really important. And I'd like to say one other thing about the process that we were in. When we started editing the interviews to that one-page statement for the book and for the exhibition, we worked personally with every single person we interviewed and got their approval. Like when we rewrote their words into this text, we tried to use as much of their very specific way of speaking in all of the text. But we always ran it by them. We always gave them an last edit, because we wanted this to be a collaborative thing. We didn't want to
misrepresent or represent anyone in a way that wasn't how they wanted to be represented. Because knowing, you know, having been a journalist and done a lot of interviews, I know sometimes you say things and they fall on people's ears in a different way. And sometimes it doesn't matter. It's not a big deal. But sometimes it does. And so we really wanted everyone to feel very comfortable with what they had told us.
that's one of the advantages is having a wife who's a great journalist because, you know,
I wouldn't say
she knows where the boundaries are.
One of the things I was curious about with your connection with Duncan, he really is sort of the first, particularly coming out of Green Berets, Special Forces, really the first major voice to come out in that war. And then he starts to become more visible, the Ramparts cover. Did you get a sense that that he regretted anything?
No, I don't think he regretted it at all. I think he was just burned out. And, you know, I mean, even for myself, there was a period of time when I first got back from Vietnam and I lived here in Yellow Springs. A lot of people didn't even know I went there. Once the war had ended, I think a lot of us just wanted to shelve it for a while. And that's what I did. And I think that's what Don did, too.
And I think the other thing about Don was, as happens in movements, there's a lot of politics involved, and there are a lot of factions and a lot of infighting and a lot of, no, we shouldn't do this. Well, we shouldn't do it. And I think after a while, because he was so deep into it and he was traveling all over the place, testifying, speaking, everything, I think after a while, it just got to be like I think in some ways he maybe felt a little used by the end. And would you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's partly why he retreated and was a little suspicious, because I think he felt like, this is dangerous ground because there's so many minefields here. And that's understandable in a movement like that.
So Bill, you sort of built a bridge back for him then.
Well, I guess in a sense, because later on I became an associate producer on the film Sir No Sir, which is some small extent based on a lot of our work. And when David Zeiger wanted to interview Don was, again, very reluctant. And it was, you know, me interceding and convincing him to, you know, spend time and interview with David. And if you watch the film, it's an incredible interview. I mean, to see his presence and see the kind of a force of nature, because he was a poster boy for the U.S. military. He was actually tapped to give Elvis Presley his personal training test when Elvis went into the military, because they knew the press was going to be there. He's good-looking, well-built, blonde hair, chiseled chin, you know, ideal person. So when he quit, and it was a shock to everybody. And as you said, this connection to Ramparts magazine, he became an editor and writer at Ramparts and also toured with Jane Fonda and Donald Sutherland on the FTA tour as well. But he was everywhere then.
A reminder for listeners that you can find the podcast along with materials related to individual episodes, Bill's photographs of the participants, and the story of Bill's later return visits to Vietnam on the website amatterofconscience.com. It's well worth your time to go through the website as you listen to the podcast. Great to see you both. Thanks for coming in and speaking
to me.
Thank you,
Dave.
Thanks, Dave, for having us. Great to see you again.
Special thanks again to Willis Eidenberg and Bill Short. Once again, the website related to today's program is amatterofconscience.com. You've been listening to Think Twice on WYSO. I'm Dave Barber. Thanks for listening.